Hello, everyone. Welcome to Outpost Day 3 here in Anaheim. How's everyone enjoying their experience so far? Yeah? Good? All right. Well, welcome to the Forging Rules panel. This is going to be a historic look at how Forge has changed a community. We're going to go ahead and kick off introductions. First of all, I am Duststorm. I run a podcast called Podtacular, and we cover a lot of different variety of topics if it has Halo in the title or is related to Halo in any way, shape, or form. And we'll go down the row, starting over here with our next panelist. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, my gamer tag is Icy Hot Spartan. I do Forge and stuff. And that is something I built. I like it. I don't know if anyone else does.
Yeah, all the maps are
I like it.
Yeah, most of the screenshot maps that you'll see behind the title slides have been made by these individuals, so.
Hi there.
Except this one.
I did not make that. That's
except this one.
I'm Michael Shore. I'm the lead Forge designer at 343. I'm so happy you guys are here. I'm having a great weekend. I hope you are, too. It's pretty cool to see you all Forge all the time for a few days, so.
All right. My name is Jacob, also known as Squally to Beans online. One of the curators on BTB and maker of Echelon, Fracture, Pioneer, and Hinterlands.
I'm going to go ahead and eat this mic because I haven't had breakfast. I'm the Dark Skull. I just recently made Meander for BTB and just been an overall Forge lurker since 3. So.
There you go. Hi, Tess. Hey, guys. Thanks for coming to check us out. I'm Evan, or Commander Coulson. Some of you may have, if you've played the BTB playlist, you may have run into my map, Scavenger. But I am also a Forger, and hi.
Hi, Evan. Hi, I'm Connie. I'm the Forge Hub Community Manager. So, and you have never seen that map. Nobody has ever seen that map. So, you've seen it?
Until now.
Wow, goodness.
Oh, I remember that. It was like a couple years back.
Yeah, I was old. Anyway, it's great to be here. Like I said, I'm the Forge Hub Community Manager, so I don't do a lot of level design myself anymore. I'm more into managing the website and the community and maintaining our relationship with the developers.
Very cool. All right, who here, just by a quick raise of hands, has dabbled in Forge or messed around with Forge in any shape or form in any of the Halo games? So most people. Does everyone know what Forge is?
We will convert you.
Does everyone know at least what Forge is? Mostly? All right. Well, for those maybe not so inclined, Forge is an in-game tool that lets people create their own custom maps and modes for fun game modes, competitive game modes, or anything that you can do with multiplayer underneath it. And it really is a kind of a manipulator of object scripting, and other gameplay modifiers that can be toyed around with to have some really crazy and wacky effects and some really interesting game modes that we've seen over the time of Halo's history. And it allows for not just multiplayer experiences, but also some fan art that we see through the forging capabilities there as well. I know we kind of showed a quick little glimpse of what everyone has done in the terms of Forge, but let's go down the road. We'll start with you, Connie. When did you first start getting involved with Forge specifically?
So I was very young when Halo 3 came out and Forge was introduced. It was, at the time, of course, very rudimentary, very simple. There wasn't a lot of geometry things you could do until map packs came out to release maps like Foundry or Sandbox. I remember being a little girl and playing Sandbox and just making mazes with those like really rudimentary hallway pieces.
Yeah.
And my friends hated them because I always made them play them. Nobody else ever played them. I didn't even do them, but I always made my friends do it. They hated it. Reach is when I started to actually get into more of the competitive aspect of it, of actually trying to create a space that would be fun and flow well for players to actually play a game of Slayer, capture the flag, just basic stuff like that. Halo 4 as well, just kind of toyed around with it, didn't really do anything too serious. Halo 5 is when I really started to actually get more involved closely. It's when I joined up with 4chub and became one of their writers, later their community manager. And it's led to, I mean, I've met countless people, like every single person on this panel I had known at some point before meeting them today, just because of Forge and our shared interest in that that game mode. It's really kind of brought a lot of people together. And it's interesting as a community manager to see how that's led to so many friendships and so many people really coming together just to celebrate something that they're able to do well.
Very cool. Colson, how about you? How'd you get your start in Forge?
Hey, guys. So I have kind of a weird introduction to Forge and Halo in general. Does everyone remember Sandtrap? Did anyone ever do the thing where you run in like a big circle, like 300% speed, like super fast and all that? So I was at church once when I was a kid. Bear with me. I was at church and they had a division where like the parents went off to the main church situation.
Call them gatherings.
Yes.
There you go.
And some of the, so for the kids, me at the time, they had this area where you could drop us off for like where we would do our own little thing. But they had video games set up to keep, you know, kids occupied. And one of the video games at church was the M-rated Halo 3, naturally. So, I walked over because I saw, you know, video games. Hey, it looks cool. And there was like a couple older kids using Forge they were on Sandtrap. And what they were doing was they were taking crates and like blocking off doorways and stuff on the structures to make it, you know, like the, you know, so, oh, you have to fight to get in. And then switching over to custom games and playing like with someone, like the zombie thing where someone was running around at 300% speed and they were having to hide in the little, you know, the little catacombs of Sandtrap. And, you know, me, a little kid at the time, super impressionable, I thought that was just incredible. So, you know, I badgered my parents for the next year until we got an Xbox. And I immediately jumped in and started trying to do that same thing. And, you know, a couple other friends of mine who lived around me, you know, their parents also got them Xboxes. So, you know, we could all get online. And it was kind of through that, you know, meeting up online, and some of us eventually through matchmaking met some other people that we started to meet, like online people who took Forge seriously, you know, who didn't just put crates and jam them into doorways and such. So we started to meet people who would show us like, hey, well, if you go to this one map called Sandbox or this one map Foundry, you can actually put together structures, you know, like actually make something. And that honestly was kind of the gateway into what inevitably has culminated. I can't speak. Eventually has led me to get interested in level design and use Forge as an asset to help facilitate that. For those of you who have played Halo 5, I'm sure you're familiar with the fact that Halo 5's Forge, you can do just a little bit more in that than you could in Halo 3's. Just a little bit. And just a little bit. And so kind of sticking with that online community as, you know, the Halo franchise has progressed and Forge has evolved, I've just always kind of been a part of that. And it's always been a source of inspiration and expression for me. And it's just something I love doing. And yeah.
Okay. So for me, I've always been a Halo fan. Ever since I my uncle gave me an Xbox because my PlayStation broke. That was right when Halo Combat Evolved came out. So I've been hooked on that ever since. When Forge was announced, like in a VODOC, I was super hyped because all the custom games in Halo 2 were like, we had to work around, you know, the maps and like all the geometry. We had to like do everything in custom games, basically. Like, I don't know if you all remember like Infection or Zombies in Foundation. I don't know if anybody has a memory going back that far, but it was weird. And we couldn't manipulate blocks. So we had to physically as Spartans, melee crates to barrier doors and everything. And then when we got infected, we have to switch over to the green team.
It was honor rules.
Honor rules. Everything was honor rules back then. So
great college dorm memories.
Right? I was way too young for a college dorm, but I did bring my Xbox over to my friend's house, and we would do like mini LAN parties there. But point is, it came out, and we could manipulate blocks. We could put weapons wherever we wanted. My first map ever was taking a bunch of shipping crates and putting it on the beach of Last Resort, and putting the assault bomb placement over there. So it was an inverse Last Resort, and whenever the bomb went off, I put fusion coils underneath that, so the whole thing would go up at the end of each round. Weird stuff like that. Forge is just a nice outlet for creation for all of us, in fact, and it's just been really cool. And I started really getting into Forge's nitty-gritty Halo 4 when I made a shameless remake of Blaze Dillon's, or Who's Blaze's map, and he actually liked it better than his own, and he introduced me to everybody.
Which map was that?
I don't remember the original one, but I think I renamed it Fortitude, something like that. Okay. Yeah, that was a long, long time ago. But that's how I got introduced to Forge.
Okay, so I guess my history with Forge kind of goes back to playing with Legos during childhood. Because you could...
I think we all just played...
I feel like we can definitely all relate to
that.
I
think a lot of us
could
probably trace that back, yeah. Yeah. It's just building structures, creating spaces. I've always been fascinated by that. And then with Halo 3, a friend of mine introduced me to the Forge mode. I was like, oh, cool. You could manipulate blocks, move it around. But it was still really kind of clunky, very limited. So I was like, not for me. Not like... I can't do what I want to do with it. When Reach came around, and I didn't see any previews on Forge or anything. I just jumped into the Forge mode, and I just started playing around with the controls and tools. It's like, oh, movement snaps, got it. Edit coordinates, got it. Rotation snaps, got it. Merge objects, got it. It just clicked. So I started just building tons and tons of maps in Halo Reach, just learning more about level design just by playing my maps with just random people for matchmaking that I had invite, seeing what worked, what didn't, just kind of being self-taught for almost 2 years on that, until when Halo 4 was around the corner. Then I started getting involved with the community, meeting people, and then just being around people, learning design, just got better and better and better, and just continue to do so today.
So my route's been a little different. I've been in the game industry for almost 15 years now. And I've shipped games on many other engines, proprietary engines. And so last year, 343 had a space open for the Forge lead. And of course, I got that space. And so I came to Forge sort of bringing my experience in other engines and looking to, sort of bring that to the Forge experience. I did start my career, though, with the communities that existed back then. So the Unreal, the Unity communities. I made maps just like these guys did. We talked online. We played the games online on our own custom servers. So it's very similar. I feel a kinship with these guys because of the way the community has existed. So
that's cool.
Yeah, you need this, don't you?
I do need this. I'd say mine is generally the same sort of origin. You can kind of sum it up with everything that you all have already said. But I didn't really join any Forge community until, I think, December of 2017 or 2016, one of those years. So I've only really been around on the internet for a little bit of time. It's been a wild ride full of very, very long blog posts and interesting design discussions. Because a lot of the time, the Forge tool is, it's not something like Unreal, but it's approaching that. It's a very, very versatile tool. You can create structures, you can use physics and edit the physics, you can do scripting things. And one of the really cool things about Halo 5 is the new scripting tool, which allows you to actually kind of create a living space that you can do whatever the whatever you want to do in it, whether that's serious competitive multiplayer design, which I think you should be doing, personal bias there, or playing something like what's it called, Crossy Road or something, where you have to dodge the balls. I mean, that's fun too. It's you know, I think it all comes down to the same principles. It's just a different way of doing it, and it's a different gameplay style, and Forge does it all, so it's pretty cool.
So we're going to go through a little bit of the history of Forge, how it started with Halo 3 and how it's progressed over time. Who on the panel started with forging in Halo 3? Everybody. All right.
Yeah.
And people so, in the audience, too. You guys can raise your hands. That's great. Yeah,
most I did was the obligatory maze inside of Foundry.
But my one, it's not really a claim to fame, but my one forge that I did in Halo 3 was I tried to remake Chiron on Foundry.
Oh, good luck.
Nice.
And I actually managed to do it.
Three?
In three, yeah. I don't think I was able to find my map for the transfer. Unfortunately, it was probably on another Xbox that I had a long time ago. So I'm probably gonna recreate it in MCC if I have.
I just recently dug up my old hard drive, like the old one that was the big brick on the top. So I have to find a way to get that on within
for the MCC transfer.
For the MCC transfer, yeah, I got to get that going.
Well, it's already done.
Yeah. Oh, is it done? Then never mind. I'm screwed.
Well, we got some people that might be able to have a grace period for maybe forging communities. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wink, wink. I need that. I need to bring back Pallet Parade.
I'll have to look into that.
All right, so Halo 3 obviously is the first game that featured the Forge mode, and it's really one of the first in-game map manipulating tools that we've seen in the console space, which is pretty unique, I think, to the Halo franchise. There's not many other games that do that, but there are some other games that have started adopting similar capabilities. And also help popularize some of the more well-known game modes that we see today, like Infection and Griffball. In addition to that, Forge templates like Foundry and Sandbox were also introduced to kind of give forgers a little bit more capabilities once Bungie realized, hey, we're throwing this tool out there, we'll see what happens, and people started making some really crazy stuff, and they decided to try to support that community, and there was a lot of value in what was able to be done with the community as far as custom games, artwork, wacky game modes for action sack playlists and all that kind of stuff. And it wouldn't be Halo 3 if we didn't talk about the on-screen effects as well. Juicy.
When everyone put all the filters down at once and you couldn't see the map, that was awful.
So then you had to delete the map because
the map is S tier. If all the filters are on at once...
There were some Infection customs that had just about like in between six or all of the film or the on-screen effects enabled.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I want to mention really quick that Halo 3 had in spades and was its physics engine and its sandbox. It was ridiculous. And you could do a lot of stuff with it. Like, you know, some things would float on water, some wouldn't. They would sink. Weapon holders and a bunch of crazy stuff. You could manipulate like the space. I remember people made like switches trap pads based on like whether an object updated or not, which means like we can make buttons, switches, and crazy machinery like just by using the game's physics engine. It was like
a lot of Ruby Goldberg stuff.
And like that's just one of the things that is really very overlooked nowadays. But it just Halo 3 did that in spades, and it was such a cool sandbox to work with.
And don't forget some of the respawn point art.
Oh, respawn art too.
Yeah, there's some notable ones in there. I'll just leave it at that.
I wasn't aware that was going to be discussed at this panel.
Yeah, we're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, we're not. I don't think you brought it up.
We didn't say what.
We just said it existed.
We know.
The Master Chief one's pretty cool.
Yeah, that one
that's
is
what
really
we're talking
cool.
about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. So from 3, we go to Reach, and this one introduced a lot more forging objects to use. So we got some prefab, some more base pieces, started going into a little bit more of the terrain pieces as well. So you can actually make a map that's
mostly just rocks. People would use rocks as like dirt and sand and stuff. Squint your eyes and pretend.
We got a little bit more in the game mode, though. There was also the insane game type, which introduced a lot of cool customs. I think there was one that the Psycho Duck did, and I can't remember what it was, but it had like a something like bouncing on the top as far as like a zone that you had to be in, and you had to run this course.
I'm not sure if that was Psycho Duck. He's more of a competitive forger. Maybe Darth Clackers?
Or sorry. No.
You know what you
it's
might
one of the duck ones.
What you might... Oh, you're thinking...
Pete the Duck.
No, it was Pete the Duck. But when it comes to Psycho Duck, he ran the YouTube channel that would feature a lot of stuff like that. So... Yeah.
I think we have too many birds in the Forge community.
What's that?
I think we have too many birds in the Forge community.
Too many birds? We do have a lot of birds. People like to fly.
Psycho Duck? A lot of birds.
Birds?
I think he likes birds.
Psycho Ducks, Quackers, like all these people.
Another thing that might be worth mentioning for Reach is that when it came to Halo 3's Forge, it was never necessarily intended to be made for actual level creation. It was only meant to edit stuff, but move a weapon on Narrows or replace a Spartan laser with an energy sword on Valhalla. But when Bungie started seeing that, people are trying to take this and manipulate it into to create actual legit levels, that's when Reach was developed to be a lot more geared towards enabling level design and stuff. It was still possible in 3, but Reach, I think, was a lot more... they had that more in mind when designing the Forge to make it... We want you to be able to make original maps and such.
Well, they took a lot of the tricks that the community was using in 3, like merging objects into each other and stuff. They just made it tools that you just use in the menu.
They also introduced the greatest piece that they've ever had, which is the massive grid that you would just smack people around with.
And crash the game with?
Yeah, I put it into the mountain, turn it on normal physics, and crash everyone's game. I used to always do that.
Monster.
I remember a few forging lobbies where we'd be making some stuff, and then someone would just spawn that grid and just flip it, and then everyone would go flying.
Everybody's done. It's done. Just delete the map.
Yep.
Trolls. Roto trolls.
Good times. In addition to the physics mode that you were talking about, though, we also had the snapping and precision editing also introduced, which helps a lot more with the fine precision of making maps. When we also have one feature that has kind of just disappeared from Forge, unfortunately, and that's color highlighting. So you could actually take objects that had certain traits, and you could color the mongoose stuff. There's borders on some of the wall pieces and building pieces that you could change color to indicate a team.
Oh, they were dynamic?
Some were dynamic and some you could hard set, okay. Yeah.
And that's different from just changing materials on an object?
Yeah. There was an actual option within the object to change the color. That did translate into Halo 4. Unfortunately, it did not make it to Halo 5.
Well, that's because in 5 you could just color any part of any object any color you want, so... No need.
But it's not the same.
It's better.
It's not the same.
You can't have like a purple mongoose, and that's pretty much the downfall of that.
Okay,
but
you can't do it with the vehicles, but all the objects.
But that's about it.
Much better.
Well, the nice thing about the objects were they had little things that you could change, like specific pieces of the shape to different colors instead of like the whole shape. But anyways.
This is a Forge debate.
Apparently, yeah. And then a couple other small notable things, golfing gear and other Forge objects were introduced in Halo Reach and made for even more weird custom and wacky game modes for Halo. Into Halo 4, we have the introduction of magnets. I thought that would get a little bit more of a response on this panel.
You want the magnets?
They're really good.
Is that the response you want?
It was a little bit janky then, but
ICP magnets, how do they work? Is that the response? Is that the correct one?
I was just looking for a response, but...
No, they definitely help. It's just when you have too many objects merged together, the magnets would like fight against each other. Mm-hmm. That's when it got a little bit rough, which that problem has been solved since then.
Yeah. We also had optic highlighting, which would help forgers make sure that they are moving the desired object they want to move instead of trying to guess whether or not an object that's been merged with another object is the one they're actually trying to fix or put in place. So that also paired with locking objects at the time made for reducing the amount of mistakes made in Forge to a minimum.
Accidentally deleting the entire map in one bold single stroke.
Yeah. Do we have some horror stories?
No.
None that wish to be discussed.
That's between me and my therapist.
A couple other notable things up here. Trait zones, being able to change different aspects of the game mode depending on where you are in the map. And then some other additional Forge pieces like the green screen, trees, and some more base prefabs to introduce more pieces that you can use to make your map.
Yeah, basically just taking the Reach model and giving us more stuff, giving us better tools, and just iteration implemented.
Right. And then we got Forge Island.
Oh, and Forge Island, which is the greatest, one of the greatest gifts 343 have ever given us without us even asking. Oh, wait, no, we asked for it, just we didn't expect it. It's really cool.
Flat ground.
Completely flat. Halo 2 Anniversary had probably the smallest update to Forge, but it did introduce something that would be heavily utilized in Halo 5, and that is scripting.
Scripting was definitely a help. Like all those crazy things that we used to do to try to make like dynamic elements in maps.
Something as simple as a door opening.
Yeah, simple as a door opening or making like an elevator or something like that. Like scripting helped us leaps and bounds. Just caused way less problems and just really nice quality of life. So that we can make maps more interesting and interactive with players.
Yeah, and of course more object. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no! I was just gonna ask. I mean, who here has been, whether or not you're like a hardcore Forger or not, who here has kind of throughout the games noticed the differences in Forge as they've kind of upgraded it every time? Who's played around with it? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. No, it's fun, and especially when they add those new things. Because I mean, if you remember back in like Halo 3, like you'd have to, you know, punt a crate in front of a door or something, but now then like H2A, they have an actual gate. You press a button and it goes down and stuff. Fun stuff like that was always led to cool new things.
And as in every Forge that we get, we got even more objects.
More objects,
which is kind of the de facto. And then Halo 5, probably the biggest change to Forge between the different iterations of the game. This is just kind of a high-level overview, but what I like to do going down the row here, and we'll start with Icy Hot this time. What's one thing in Halo 5 that you find most helpful for you forging in Halo 5?
Prefabs and grouping. Prefabs and grouping, that's a big deal. One of the major issues...
Prefabs and grouping. That's what I said.
Prefabs and grouping. So one of the major issues that Forge's prior had was that you could only select one object at a time. What Halo 5 did is added the ability to select up to 64 objects in one go, group them all as one object, move that around the map as one thing. So you could, if you wanted to do a block out, you could block out a corner of a map, you could block out the center of a map. Some interesting gameplay idea that you were working with, and then just take that, test it, put it somewhere else. If it didn't work there, move on. Or you could do the same thing with an art asset. You could just take that, and then the other thing with the duplicate key, just duplicate it. You got another one. Really, really helps with the systematization of the level building process, which is pretty cool. If you want to save time and build something very, very interesting from an aesthetic and gameplay perspective. So that's the thing that I have found the most interesting so far.
I think I've only really made a couple maps in Forge, and it's just to learn it. But the thing that's helped me the most, and it's not new with 5, but it's just magnets and snapping. It's so easy to create a layout and just sort of have an idea of a space with magnets, and they just snap together, and then you drop in and you play it. That's how I work well. So
cool.
So the thing I like most about Halo 5's Forge that they added, it's a really small thing a lot of people may not know about, but you can set the rotation of an object to either be world relative or object relative. So in previous games, if you like turn an object 45 degrees to the side and then try and angle it up 45 degrees, it would be at like this weird, unusable angle. In Halo 5, you can make it so that it's always rotating on its own axis, individual of, from the world, so that you can like turn something to the side and then angle it upward as a ramp, and it works as it's supposed to. It's great.
My favorite thing about Halo 5's Forge, oh, what helped? I actually have to agree with Icy Hot over there. Prefabs are probably like the greatest thing to ever happen, ever of all time. And you will you can fight me on that. just because you can save those groups after the fact, and you could bring them to other maps. So what that allows is asset design. So you can like make objects that are really cool. You can save it, and you can place it down on another map. What I do is I specialize in like Forerunner structures and stuff, like from Halo 3 to Halo 2. That's my that's my jam. So what I do is I make like a cool piece, and I save it for later. Just in case like it's better on a on another map, or it doesn't fit, or like maybe like I want to make like a mock-up later, I can just throw pieces down and make like a quick map. It's really nice, and also like it's a good way to build stuff with modular pieces like that. And then you create more pieces to like fit, and then it becomes like Legos, which we all love apparently. So stuff like that.
And then you let me steal your objects and become centerpieces on my maps, right?
Well, and speaking of prefabs, a great example of a prefab is that boy just right there in the middle of the screen. There's a map of mine named Flux that actually went into matchmaking, and I actually put an Easter egg on the map where if there's an explosive barrel in the map, and if you shoot it out in the skybox, that boy would appear. And he would be majestically watching the sunset on one of my on the map that I made. So prefab, especially.
Is that still in?
I don't know. It's not because it was in the doubles playlist. Oh, okay, they changed that around. Okay. So
it's not going to be anymore.
I outed myself. And all the features you guys have said are really good. I think actually a really underappreciated feature, especially in Halo 5's Forge, is the use of filters and fog. Because filters is something that has always been within Halo's Forge to an extent. You know, in Halo 3, you had the crazy... when was old-timey?
It was in Halo 3.
Was that Halo 3?
Halo 3,
was
yeah.
Was that the one where you got the film burn with the entire screen turn?
Yep.
Yeah, fun stuff like that. And Nova, oh boy. Filters have always been a part of... Forge, kind of those like Instagram-y like filters that change the screen, but in Forge for Halo 5, it went from being more, you know, oh, just for laughs and for fun, and for more like to really try and help you reach kind of the color palette that you were trying to achieve. You know, for instance, if I use a filter like blue green, it kind of takes the overall tone of the colors on the map and the cube map, and just kind of gives everything that nice kind of finish, you know, like, and then the same with fog filters. For those of you who may not know, fog is actually can be a big role in Halo 5's Forge. And what I really like using it for is creating a sense of depth and field, in sense of separating the foreground from the background, which can be a really subtle thing, but I think can be just one of those nice final touches you can give to a map to kind of really add that sense of polish and just try and make it feel as professional as possible when it comes to a Forge map. A great example is actually the map that you see on with the key in the bottom middle. It's kind of that one right there. That's an excellent example of a map that's using fog to kind of really add ambience to its... you know, environments, and kind of create that depth and feel between the foreground and the background. So, and I feel like those are features that aren't always talked about because they are just such a, you know, something you don't, you know, when you walk around a map, you notice that boy, you don't notice, oh, the fog is soft in this area. So, but, you know, I think those are really nice touches as well.
you know, it's not so much as one addition, like we were talking about magnets or like rotation snap based on object orientation. It's not so much that as much as it is just the amount of aesthetic possibilities in Halo 5's Forge is incredible. Like each and every one of these maps that you see right there was made entirely in Forge, and none of them have the same environment. You can create anything almost with what you have available to you, which is a huge step up from Halo Reach, where you could create a gray blob. Like, sure, it would be a fun map to play, but it's still a gray blob. A gray blob's a gray blob. Or Halo 4, where you would have your one map where you have your dusty pipes, or you would have space stuff. And it's like, pick one or the other, as opposed to Halo 5's Forge, where now you have the ability to create almost any type of environment that you want. You can make an underwater map completely just on a whim. You can make any type of environment. And honestly, that's kind of made it so that maps aren't so basic anymore, so that I actually can go in and recognize when a map looks good rather than just having to play it for myself to see if it's something that's fun as opposed to something that's just pretty to look at. And that's just changed up the whole forging scene, because really now there's anything can look like anything. So it does make it harder though at the same time, because now that you can make anything look like anything, there's no excuse to have a gray blob, which of course is much easier.
To springboard off of that a little bit, has anyone seen the community playdate stuff with Sketch and DJ? Have you seen that stuff? A lot of those modes and a lot of those maps were made in Halo 5 Forge. You know, like, what was it, Meta Wave and Husky Raid? Those are both from the community. That map is super unique looking. It kind of looks like Tron or future Miami Vice or something, you know, and Husky Raid is a community mode that 343 has put forward into the hoppers for official matchmaking. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely all right. Those things.
And taking such a basic game mode as Husky Raid, where you're really just, it's one on one head on. It's nothing like complex that you need a very difficult layout to make, but you can still make the map look completely different from any other map for that game mode. Forge Hub recently hosted that competition for the Husky Raid maps, which then brought some about for the matchmaking update put those in. And like, all of them are different. All of those maps feel different. They all play and function virtually the same. They have the same goal in mind, but like you're saying, they're completely different. There's a Tron map, and then there's like,
there's one that looks like it's like a Halo campaign level,
right?
With the big
the orbital one,
yeah.
And then there's like an orbital type one. There's a Covenant themed one.
Uh huh.
There's like a ruins type of one.
It's like a tank factory.
Yeah. The tank factory.
Tank factory one's pretty cool.
MA08 factory. Yeah.
Don't tell the forger that made it. I said that though.
I don't know. Just
kidding.
But yeah, to that point though. Forge has impacted not just like the competitive multiplayer side of things, but you have a lot of the custom games like Husky Raid, Super Fiesta, Big Team Battle, all those modes that whenever you're looking for content refreshes, 343 is looking at forgers out there to see what they're coming up with, different ideas, and giving a fresh experience and a fresh coat of paint to matchmaking, which helps incredibly. You also have machinimators that benefit from Forge as well, being able to make their own stories with the video game, and we've had a Machinima panel yesterday, which we got to see some people's works on what they've done with Halo 5 and some other video games under the Halo umbrella. And then we also have different communities out there. So we have Next Level Design represented by Icy Hot. We have Forge Hub represented by Connie. There's also Forge Labs, the Halo Forge Epidemic, and quite a few other communities that have revolved around this idea of teaching people how to use Forge, doing tutorials on how to do certain things, or just being a site that you can collaborate and collect different wacky customs that you can do for a customs night. And Forge has had that big impact on the community in that way. As far as forging goes, there's kind of three general concepts when it comes to making a forge map. Obviously, having a map layout and flow is pretty important. Having a visual theme that really sets your map apart and kind of gives a story to what you're making. And then the gameplay aspect of it, whether you're making a CTF map or you're making a big team map. And then what are some of the different concepts that you want? Do you want certain flows? Do you want certain power weapons and all that kind of stuff? I know everyone up here probably has a little thing to add into this basic design concepts, but what do you guys think is kind of one of the things that people often overlook as far as making maps?
I'd say blockouts. A lot of people jump straight into trying to make a final map, make it look as good as it can, and then they find there's some fatal flaw with the design, and they have to go back and change it to make it play better, but they've already become attached to all the work they put into the art, and they don't want to do it. So generally, if you build a rough version of the map just to get the idea across, you kind of go through the design process of what's called finding the fun. And once you hone in on that, you can change the design more. If it's just simple blocks, it's really easy to change things and swap things out, redesign sections of it. And then once that part is done and you're comfortable with the gameplay you have, then you can go back and replace those objects with stuff that looks better, and you can work on visual orientation and stuff like that.
One that's a little bit more difficult too, that I find extremely important in mostly competitive maps, is readability. It's a hard thing to get down, but a lot of maps go for a very realistic visual appeal over readability, which, of course, readability is being able to tell where the layout is going to take you, being able to look at something and understanding where the pathing is, as opposed to aesthetics. A lot of the times people will put in aesthetic pieces that look like they're part of the gameplay, of the geometry of the map, and in the end, it kind of interferes with the gameplay. You're not able to use that piece of geometry to traverse the map, or just there's an issue with between the actual gameplay and the aesthetics of it. So readability and making sure that your map is not only, it looks good, but you still need to be able to tell where everything is going to take you. You should be able to know what the path is of the map, where it's going to take you, where you should be, where you probably shouldn't be. It's important to be able to tell what's going on there.
If you start simple, like Squally has suggested, like that will, it'll come naturally. Because if you just make a layout and you focus only on how the player moves around the map, and you get it to a point where it's fun and you can play with other players, even if it does look like a gray blob, at that point you're like, this is fun. Now I can go into the weeds and I can put in weeds or bushes or trees or rocks or pipes or, you know, like
even just different colored lights,
fans, you know, whatever. Like you've got your core experience already dialed in, and then you build on top of that, and then you know when you're ruining or not, right? Like you
right.
You know, when the spinning fan in the corner is more of an eye catcher than the ramp that goes up to the right, then you're like, I got to take that fan out.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and jump on in here to some slides that these guys have prepared. And Squally, we'll start with you. But tell us a little bit about how you would kind of recommend people going through actually making their maps.
So this is more of just how I approach things. It doesn't have to necessarily be this order, but I found this is what works for me. The first thing you need to do before you start designing a map is you need to answer a couple key questions about design, first of all, such as player count, size, symmetry, and what game modes it's going to play. So first you got to figure out, do you want it to be like 4v4? You want it to be 8v8 as a big team? Maybe something even small like a 1v1 or 2v2? You get that down, and that'll kind of determine the size of map you're going to make. And then within that kind of range of like 4v4, 8v8, you kind of determine how big of a map you want to support those players, because different size maps for different player counts will have different pacings. You can have a really small map that can play 4v4, and it's going to be really hectic, really fast paced, a lot of dangerous spawns, a lot of team shooting. Or you can have something that's still 4v4, but maybe a little bit more open and spread out, which leads to more slow tactical gameplay where players are more focused on getting into a good position, ambushing other players, long-range engagements, that sort of thing. So you kind of figure out what player count and size you want. Then you got to ask yourself what kind of symmetry you want it to be. Do you want it to be asymmetrical or parallel symmetrical, which is like a mirrored version of the two sides, almost like the pit or midship, or something we call rotational or radially symmetrical, which is both teams, in order to do the same thing on either side, will go in their own respective direction. So like both teams run to their right to get to their sniper rifle, kind of like Sanctuary in Halo 2 is rotationally symmetrical. And then based on what kind of symmetry can also lead into what game modes you want to focus on. Generally, a symmetrical map will play CTF or Assault really well. So you pick one of those and kind of cater the design to that. Or with an asymmetrical map, you can maybe focus it on Oddball, where there's no good camping spots, or King of the Hill, where you have a lot of interesting sections where everyone can just mosh pit in and fight over. So once you have those ideas, like what kind of size and symmetry and player count and game modes you want to focus on, what I think is really important after that is kind of locking down what sort of environment you want this to take place in. Because if you understand the environment, you understand what kind of geometry to use in that environment. So if someone was making something that was a lot of 90 degree corners with a lot of sharp angles, very square doorways, and then you try and make it look like a Covenant map later on, it doesn't translate as well because the Covenant's all rounded and very like curved doorways, very wide, very like curved ramps and everything. It doesn't look like the map you designed anymore. So understanding what you want the map to look like at the end can help you determine what sort of geometry to use after that. And then finally, one of the things that I always look for when designing a map is, what is your hook? What is the thing about the map that will make it memorable and stand out from other people's maps? And a hook can be anything from like a gameplay gimmick, which, you know, gimmicks are often frowned upon, but they're not always bad. They can be fun interactive elements. They could be you could be like a moving piece of geometry, like the fan in the center of Zanzibar. I'd call that a hook for Zanzibar. Like, it should be like a one sentence thing about the map that when you tell people what map it is, you describe this one hook, people instantly understand what it is. So like on High Ground, the hook of High Ground is the fact that the gameplay all focuses on the main structure up the top. You tell people, oh, it's the one with the base at the top of the hill that everyone fights up the hill to get to. That's your hook. So anything like that. Then once you have your hook, you have your design down, then you start getting into the nitty gritty of testing. That's when you figure out what pathways work, what power positions work, what weapons you want on it. And you just test and test and test your map more and more and more. And the more you test it, the more refined the idea can be. If you collaborate with other designers, you will often find they have good ideas of what can help the map be more fun, what can help the map be more balanced. And you just continue iterating on it. If you iterate enough, almost any map design can become polished enough to make a great map, no matter what the idea is. Then, like I said, with the blockout, once you have that final gameplay laid down, you start working on art and finalize your visuals.
So we have a couple of the demo stuff here.
Yeah. Go.
Hey, from Echelon.
Right, yeah. So this was one of my maps that has gone through all of the Halos ever since Reach and has gone through multiple variations, lots of iteration, lots of changes. So if you see the first picture there labeled number one, that's the first version I made in Reach. And it was essentially just translating a map from a different video game into Reach so I could try playing Halo on it. And, you know, it was cool. It was fun. It worked, but it was nothing special. It was pretty basic. So then I started thinking of what are some ideas and designs that I could add to make it more unique and more my own. So you see in picture number two, there's more additions to the map. There's extra pathing. There's new spaces. There's new routes added to it. And the flow on it was just a lot better. It wasn't just a big L-shaped. It was a little bit more of a completed loop. And then moving on to Halo 4, I updated the design once again, making some of the areas multi-leveled, adding even more pathways and sight lines through areas, blocking off other sight lines that I found were too powerful in Reach. And then just iterating on it more and more later in Halo 4, kind of refined that design, simplified things that were too complex, opened up things that were not noticeable. And then in H2A, again, just continuing to refine it until we came to Halo 5. And with Halo 5 having a completely different sandbox with like unique movement mechanics and everything, it really opened the doors into what this design could offer. So I just started experimenting with ways to add additional levels of verticality and additional spaces into the existing flow and design of like allowing players more options of where they could move to get around players. So if you see top right corner number 6 there, that was the first version of Echelon. And I started going down the route of that theme, and I was finding the art was kind of hard to make a cohesive vision with that style I was trying to go for. And I was running into like things like performance issues, frame rate was dropping, it wasn't quite working out. So I opted to go for a much simpler and cleaner look in a completely different environment, but still keeping a lot of the same geometry. And once I did that, a lot of things just kind of clicked on like what the proportions should be, what the shapes should be, what the routes are, how players get between different levels. And eventually got to the final product there, which is now in Halo 5 matchmaking. So, and that one, that was a process that took several years just honing in on one design. This one, my map Fracture in the BTB playlist, this was a much more rapid iteration. The design process of getting the gameplay right was only 2 months on this one of just going in there and playing it almost every single day. And after every single playtest, I would go back in theater footage and just look at what players were doing, get feedback on what should change, what should stay the same, what worked, what didn't work. And you see, going from the first version of the map in number one to the second one, a lot of things changed. Like there was another level added to the towards the bottom. The center structure was completely different. And because before it was almost like two separate rooms, I condensed that into one single room. The ramparts at the ends of the bridges in the original one, they were just small little rooms housing the lifts. I turned those into like fully fleshed out streets and bunkers, and over time just finished up on like all the small details of pathing, on like figuring out how to prevent players from just running a straight line from base to base for capture the flag, how to force players to move where I wanted them to move by blocking certain paths and opening up other ones. So picture number 3 was the first version in matchmaking, and over time we've been allowed to make updates to the maps, and number 4 right there is the final version you'll see in the game today.
Thanks for sharing. Coulson, you got the next one on here. About getting involved with how you're actually getting involved with the
Yeah, getting yeah.
Oh.
Excuse me. All right. So, I'm going to talk a little about getting involved with the Forging community, of which we are all members of the Forging community.
Wait, I didn't know that.
Thank you.
Why am I?
So, speaking actually of him, this is Max, for those of you who don't know. Hi, Max. He and I have actually gone back, we go back to middle school, right? We've both grown up in this area, so we've actually known each other forever. So, coming back to when I mentioned how I kind of got my early beginnings, and you know, I got my Xbox and a couple of my friends did too, and you know, we all just would get online, we'd play, you know, fun child appropriate games like Lewis on Runaway Pills and Trash Compactor and just ridiculous stuff like that. I was kind of just a casual player, just, you know, oh yeah, let's just play this. And every now and then we'd find ourselves, you know, getting invited to a game or something. You know, when you play a little matchmaking, and then like a couple 10 minutes later, you like the Laughing Duck 69 wants to play a game or something. And so you join up, and what's
supposed to keep this PG, okay?
It is PG. I didn't see anything. So just over time, I eventually, you know, me, him, a cluster of us, we began to fall into custom game lobbies. Does everyone know what a custom game is when it comes to Halo? Like, where you load up? I'm just making sure. So we would begin to just kind of fall into these little clusters of games in which people began to get to know other people. And, you know, we all started to form a very loose community of people, you know, where you'd have now friends lists of people that if you wanted to play Trash Compactor, you could rely on these people on your friends list to show up if you shot them an invite. And that kind of really began to snowball when a couple forgers began to make YouTube channels. Now, is anyone here familiar with some of the YouTube Halo channels? Like, for a long time, it was Mr. Pokefile or the Halo Forge Epidemic or Online Nights or something like that. Essentially, these were YouTube channels set up and run by forgers who would find cool maps and stuff like, this is a game where you use a gravity hammer and you just beat each other up. That's cool. I want to make a YouTube video.
Isn't that Griffball?
Griffball.
That's one of them.
Griffball got the fast track. They already had a
Griffball did.
Yeah. Rooster Teeth got that ball rolling.
Infection, too. Like Infection in Halo.
Pun intended. Too. Ball rolling.
Pun is definitely intended there.
Nice.
But anything, you know, from mini games like, oh, this is a cool Infection map, or this is a cool Slayer map, or, you know, just anything. And these forgers who were running these YouTube channels essentially began to put out little feelers. You know, they would begin to, if they saw a map posted on a website such as 4chub, they would, you know, see, oh, that looks pretty cool. I'm gonna download this. I'm gonna make a YouTube feature on it. Hello and welcome to the Halo Forge up. And I'm like, I'm Mr. Psychoduck. And they would essentially make these YouTube features, which began to create kind of this sub goal to forgers. So all of a sudden, I want to forge a map to create a fun experience, but I'd also like to forge a map to be able to get kind of this little recognition from these little YouTube channels that were just running the community. Yeah.
Like you're saying, with the YouTube channel recognition, also came the concept for 4chub hosted contests, where we're able to offer monetary prizes. So not only do you get to design a map that is now going to be on YouTube and played in front of however many people are going to be on that audience,
right,
but it's also pretty nice to get $500 deposited directly to your bank account for playing a video game. So that's also a pretty good motivation.
So I can pay off my credit card debt.
Exactly.
And essentially, whoa, this one feels louder. Essentially, the Forge community and Halo community even as a whole began to form itself in becoming this online presence that ranged from YouTube videos and channels to websites like ForgeHub and Halo Customs. And we essentially began to create just kind of a reputation and a presence for people who liked Forge and liked custom games to kind of come together and meet. So where I was kind of mixed into all this is, you know, I started to get into Forge, especially Infection, you know, the fighting, you know, zombies and such. I really got into that. And I would, in Halo 4 especially, I forged a couple different Infection maps. And once upon a time, I fell into a lobby where one of the guys who ran one of the YouTube channels, he was actually hosting the lobby. He was playing the lobby. So when we went ahead and got to play my map, because, you know, I messaged him, hey, I have this really cool map. Please play it. It's in my files. And luckily, he actually decided to play it. And he actually hit me up afterwards and was like, hey, that was a really cool map. You know, I'd love to do a YouTube feature of it if that's okay. And of course, me being, you know, all excited, I was just like, That'd be fine. By all means. So, but internally, I was exploding because, you know, being able to partake in this community and just play games and such, but then for someone to notice your work and think, hey, man, that's cool. I want to put it on a podium so other people can notice it. You know, that recognition is really awesome. You know, I think, you know, we can all relate to having that recognition is something that's really cool. And so when that happened, that was kind of the gateway that, because now that, you know, I had this YouTube feature and people were downloading my map, I was getting more friend requests, and I was now on the list for this guy's go-to, you know, if he wanted to load up and play a custom lobby. Now I was on his list. So I started to get, sounds like it's some sort of like exclusive club.
VIP.
VIP status right over here. So, you know, we were all kind of a part of that. Like, for instance, Jacob here was, you know, I imagine you came from a kind of similar background, right?
Yeah, the way it worked for me was just inviting people for matchmaking and like, hey, come play my map. And I ended up inviting one of the guys who was like the go-to networking guy in the Forge community who just knew everybody. And he played on some of my maps. He's like, hey, this is really good. I see some potential in you. And he just introduced me to all these other big name forgers and YouTubers and started showing my stuff to them. Like, hey, check this guy out. And then I just got pulled into these lobbies like he was talking about and just kind of spiraled from there.
Out of my own personal curiosity, who was it? Do you remember?
Spades NAZ.
That's a long time ago.
Do you remember him?
Very vaguely. That's a very long time.
Back in Halo Reach, he was like the go-to networking and customs guy.
It's a very long time ago.
But yeah, so essentially we as forgers kind of created our own network. And eventually, as time went on and, you know, we began to get closer and became a closer knit community. As many of you probably know, if you've played any recent Halo, Forge began to become a target for content for matchmaking, in which maps and game modes would be taken and implemented into matchmaking. Starting with for Reach especially, I'm sure there was some in Halo 3 even as well. But I think it became more of a widely accessible thing, more in Reach, and a lot more widely accessible in Halo 5. And essentially, once you had gotten to the point where, you know, you kind of, you have maps that are being featured on YouTube channels, you know, you're posting on the websites, getting a map into Halo's matchmaking is kind of that next step. You know, just that gratification that, hey, I contributed to the multiplayer experience that is the Halo franchise. It's really exciting. And so Halo 5 especially is, you know, after I'd kind of networked, I've begun to know people, you know, I've begun to get invited to custom lobbies where we're testing different maps. Some of these people naturally began to network with 343 community managers, employees who were working, you know, in Washington, and they would go online, they'd look at the Waypoint forums, they'd talk to people, you know, and, you know, they'd see people posting maps and such. And eventually, come Halo 5, I was lucky enough to have my map in particular. Does anyone here know, when I say the big team battle map in Halo 5, Scavenger? Does anyone recognize that? Don't feel bad if you don't. But
he knows that. Woo!
Thank you.
You're so proud of that map.
That map was a long process. I really wanted a map in matchmaking. It was literally my end life relied on that for a couple weeks, months. God, maybe a year. 2 months. Yeah, but it was. That initial.
I don't think we have nearly enough time to let you talk about Scavenger as long as you'd want to, though.
Point is, Scavenger was a long story. It was a multiplayer map that I designed that was my first map to be implemented in matchmaking, in Halo 5's matchmaking back in 2016. Yeah, it was one of the very first BTB updates, and I've just been updating it ever since. But it was, you know, that wouldn't have happened had I not kind of gotten involved with the community of players. You know, had I not communicated and talked to people online, had I not only gotten my own maps played, but helped other people get their maps played, because that's also a big element of the Forge community, and I think just Halo in general. It's a very give and take situation where you want to collaborate and help each other, help raise each other up. And you know, ultimately I was able to kind of begin to get to know people who worked at 343. I was able to get my map tested. People liked what I was doing, and I was able to get my map in matchmaking, and then I've now had several other maps in matchmaking since. And that's, you know, it's really cool. And it's really great because you get to know a lot of people. I've known these guys. I've known, for instance, Jacob right here, or as I've always known him, as Squally to Beans. I've known him for years online, but we didn't even meet until just last year at HCS, was it? Yeah. And it's so cool how for so long I can imagine Squally as just being this guy, only to then meet him and find out he's this chiseled Hercules type of figure. And then Max here, who I've known since middle school, and we've kind of gone on this a lot. I mean, everyone starts to drift a little after high school, but through Halo and Forge, we've not drifted, you know? And there's a lot of people I've lost touch with, but we've been kind of unified through Forge and communicating online. And the fact that we can come and do this now, years after we've both graduated and start to go in different directions, it's just kind of, I'm really grateful for that, for both the Forge community and the Halo franchise. So just cool stuff like that. And yeah. Sorry,
I'm actually going to pull an audible because you kind of touched on some stuff, which leads more into what Connie wanted to talk about. And I figured Connie and Thinking Fellow, you two could probably talk about how Forge has kind of helped blur that line between kind of what the community does within Forge and how the studio kind of responds back to it. And I'm going to bring up some of the Forging communities as you guys are talking right about that.
Okay, so that was actually really good. I didn't know you were going to be talking about getting involved with the Forge community, because that's a nice segue into what we were going to be discussing, which for me, I was going to discuss the same similar thing, the Forge community from the perspective of someone who is involved with managing all of these different smaller communities. Like, from your perspective as the Forger, you are the content creator. Your story was that of somebody who is creating these maps, these game types, these experiences that then go into matchmaking, that then get noticed by 343. So that, from your perspective, is a bit different from mine, which then comes from more of a management position of this community, where I am then, your map would then go through a website such as 4chub, or just kind of go around the general circle until it starts to gain traction. And when a map gains traction, it gets noticed. Particularly, a lot of the time, by 343 Industries, by the developers, by the matchmaking leads, by anyone who is on that sustained team that's looking for that content. A lot of the places they check first are websites such as 4chub. Because it's a conglomeration, for anyone that's not familiar, it's a conglomeration where Forgers can come together to post their creations, their content, old and new alike. I mean, we have some veterans up here that have been posting on 4chub for years and years and years, since back to like Reach. And then we have newer additions such as Icy Hot, who mentioned he had only been on here since around like 2017, around then. So old and new alike, anyone can just sign up free, post a map, and it's going to be where you're going to be able to socialize with other people who have that experience that you have, where you're creating that content. So then for someone like me, where I've kind of drifted away from making the content myself just because of time constraints, it's a lot of fun, but some of us can't hold up to that dedication that some of you do, where like Squally, you were talking about years and years and years for that Echelon design, and that's just not something I can afford to do right now. But being able to still be involved closely with the community through management, through managing 4chub and their social aspects, running their contests, running their Twitter page, writing articles, things like that, keep me in touch with all of you and really help to boost both of us into a position now where we're being noticed by developers, by 343 Industries, and they're starting to recognize that we have the same potential as level designers as a lot of they do. Like Squally, you, for example, you began with Forge, and now you do test for them at 343.
Yeah, I mean, I was able to build my resume mostly with Forge experience of like, hey, I've spent years designing and testing these maps. I understand the testing process. I understand iteration of designs. I understand what goes into creating content, and I understand the inner workings of this game and its systems very well because of all that.
Right.
And I use that to build a resume, and yeah, eventually got a job at the studio.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't think of almost any other gaming environment where that's something that's possible to just say, to use your experience with the game and designing aspects of the game on your own for free as then a resume to get hired and paid by the studio that creates the game.
I'm sure they do exist, but not nearly to the extent that we've seen
right.
with Halo. Like, there are numerous forgers working at 343 now.
Right. And then, I mean, these are some people that I've known for years since before they were ever involved with 343. And now seeing everybody get elevated to a position like that is incredible. And it's all thanks to the forging community that Coulson gave us a little rundown of kind of the basics, how it built itself up to where it is today. And now to my point more of what Duststorm was saying, where we're starting to blur that line between the developers and the forgers. The developers, in some ways, do rely on forgers to bring fresh content because they're not able to focus so much on maintaining Halo 5 as we are, because it's the game that's currently out. It's what we enjoy doing. We're making content for it. And entire playlists come into rotation because of Forge.
So much work. We, one me and Evan just recently worked on was the B Team Battle Refresh, and we helped test out, and that was lots of nights of playing maps over and over again, giving feedback, trying to make it matchmaking ready, see like what needs to be done, like giving everybody like, you know, advice and stuff. It's a lot of work.
And that specific one that you're talking about, that BTB refresh that just happened, these little discussions take years. I remember in 2017, early 2017, one of my maps, the one that we showed up there on that screen there when we first introduced ourselves, was being discussed for that BTB refresh, which we didn't see until 2019. So there's a lot of effort and a lot of time that goes into these things that most people don't see. Behind the scenes, it just kind of looks like, oh, cool, there's a new map in matchmaking, or like, cool, there's a Husky raid playlist, whatever that is. But from the perspective of these guys who are making those maps, and then my perspective of like overviewing all of this, seeing all of this go down, watching this happen, it's a huge process.
Sometimes over a year behind the scenes. That BTB update, me and a couple of the other forgers in charge of curating that playlist and working with the other forgers on those maps, we started working on getting some of those existing maps updated and refreshed 15 months before that update finally went live.
It takes a long time, and there's a lot of effort involved on both parts. From
there were nearly 20 maps to work on.
Right. You have a lot to go through. There's a lot to comb through. And then kind of segueing that into the perspective of now 343 Industries that sees a very dedicated fan base in a very niche area. They can see the dedication behind your content creation, behind everyone's. They can see that 15 months of work that went in, no payment, no gratification, just because you enjoy this community. And from a developer that has made this game and made this possible, it's gratifying. They then focus on this community. They then comb through our creations. They pick our brains because now we are creating what is inevitably going into the game.
We are forgers. Bum-ba-da-dum-ba-bum-bum-bum.
From a dev perspective, you know, Forge is the way to get new content into Halo 5. You know, you see a lot of games out today, they're more of a games as service, and there's constant updates. And Halo 5 was still, by all intents and purposes, a box product. You know, they do have updates, but Forge is the best way to get something in the game without a huge patch. You know, you don't want to make people download 10 gigabytes every time a new map comes out. So, you know, Forge is part of the game. It's already there. So that loop of creating new experiences for players and getting it out there is super important. And Connie said a really important word earlier, the sustain team. And if you don't know what that means, that's sort of like, how do we sustain players in the game? How do we keep giving them new experiences? You know, I don't want to play Plaza 1,000 times or 2,000 times. Can you just give me something so I only have to play Plaza 1,000 times, right? Like, that is a really important loop. And so, like, the Forge community is super important. We call that user-generated content, or UGC, if you've ever heard that. You know, you look at Minecraft, if you're familiar with Minecraft. Have you seen their marketplace these days? It's insane. And that's all community stuff, right? You know, and Forge echoes that in some ways. And so, you know, like we said before, all these modes, Griffball, Husky Raid, Super Fiesta, like those, and some of the weirder ones too. I've seen Ski Ball, which is actually really fun. Paintball. Yeah. I'm sad that I didn't bring a video. Chris Lee gave me a video a couple of weeks for a different presentation that had a lot of really cool, like not very atypical modes. There was one that was like a American Gladiators style obstacle course, which was hilarious.
There's a lot of those now.
Yeah. Actually. I mean, you saw Crossy Road probably on the mixer stage. Mosh pit. Right.
Yeah.
So that loop is really important, and moving forward, it will be super important as well.
A really good way to highlight that in a very short story for Forge Hub in particular was a few years back when we were having HCS Orlando. I believe it was early 2017 or 18. It was one of those one of the MLG hosted events. A group from Forge Hub, from the website that I work for, attended to just kind of, you know, bring the Forge community into this competitive scene, because it's something that, you know, as competitive players, level design is not high on their level of expertise. It's not something that they're really, you know, invested in. And then for most Forgers, competitive play isn't something that we're very well versed in. Squally might be the best out of all of us here, but
I think each Forger probably has their different strengths and weaknesses.
Exactly. So we attended the HCS Orlando event, and when the event was done, we were able to meet a lot of the developers and a lot of 343 Industries that were there. One in particular was some of the pro team, some of the people from 343 that focus specifically on the esports aspects of Halo. And we had, and I mean, these are people that were a lot of retired pros, like, you know, Bravo and Strongside. I won't say specifically who this was, but it's one of those names that, you know, as a kid, I had known about and heard just thrown around because it's a big name, a Halo 2 pro. Now they're working at the studio. We had them late at night come and sit with us and tell us that they were looking for maps for HCS for their new season. And, you know, they weren't in the mindset. 343 was probably kicking up development of Halo Infinite at the time, so they weren't able to provide those new dedicated maps for those HCS tournaments. They looked to the Forge community. They asked us, hey, you guys with Forge Hub see tons of maps. You see all of this content created coming through your website all the time. Get in touch with us and send us some good 4v4 maps that you think would be well functioning for competitive play. So long story short, I mean, we went through maybe 60 different maps that we all thought were very well versed for like hardcore MLG play style. And we just handed that list off to 343, working together to create a new experience for HCS. And inevitably, that is how your map Echelon actually got in. You are then, I'm assuming after that, you were approached by them. The pros wanted to then test out your map. And
yeah, I remember that process. It kind of really kicked into gear at the World Championships in Seattle
in
2018. And after that, we kind of narrowed down the map pool to like the final seven or so.
Yeah, I remember there were about six maps that were all pulled together, and they had the pro players play on each one of them and nitpick, since what we were told at the HCS event was that pro players, no matter what we give them, they're going to hate it. So we have to find what they hate the least.
That's unfamiliar. But yeah, that mm-hmm. process began, and it was a couple months of whittling down which maps had the most potential for this high level competitive play, and just months and months of like these pro players streaming the maps and giving feedback, and the forgers, the pro players, and 343 all working together on updating and polishing and iterating on these designs until the final three were chosen.
And then that was also a very important word that you used there, which was together, because they were all working together. The developers, the forgers, everybody is now coming together with that one common goal and blurring that line between the two. Because in the end, it's all generated content. Now we're at this point where in the last HCS tournament, your map was played, as well as Fissure, I think, Negative Zero's map.
Fissure by Negative Zero, Fissure. As well as Refuge and Sanctuary.
Refuge, this, yes, Hunter. Yes. So all of that wouldn't have been possible without Forgers, without the backing of a community, and now without the developers all together working to create a sustainable environment for Halo. And that's something that I think Halo just absolutely does better than anyone.
Absolutely.
Really, really does. We're going to move on now to Dark Skull, talking about how you take feedback and incorporate it into a map.
Okay, so this is really for people that want to like make some maps and, you know, actually have, you know, have it refined down a little bit more. This is just a little bit of advice when you're taking feedback from people that are playing your map. First thing you want to do, just... you have a vision. You've built your map. Now, what you want to do is keep all like your preconceived notions of your map aside. So you want to take everything in. It's a tightrope walk. Like you want to like give people what they want, but you also want to push what you want the map to come what you want the map to do as well. If you make a catch all and if you take everybody's advice at face value, you're gonna have a camel. It's a horse designed by a committee. That's no fun. You know how it plays. You want to know who you want to cater to. Just move in that direction. And then the things that don't necessarily work, that you kind of want to keep, but sometimes just doesn't work out. Try to change it up, or find ways to make the things that do work synergize. Like try to make everything work together. That makes sense. But it's your map. You gotta if you have an audience that you know is gonna have fun with it, and if you know how you want your map to play, you should do your best to do what you do. You. That's the goal there. Yeah. And I think we can go on to the next one. And yeah, it probably won't act like the way you initially designed it. Players are going to find crazy new ways to play your map. You can't predict everything that's going to happen. And if you can, your map is it's going to be a very one note experience. Because if you can predict everything everyone is going to do, like, it might get stale after a while. It's nice to have a little bit of diversity and like finding unexpected things. So if you find players are playing your map in a way that you didn't expect, maybe like lean into that. Like, see if there's some way you can like bring that into the fold, bring that into your vision. Find the fun.
If at a high level, I think it's important to realize that if you're a level designer, you can't just design for yourself, right?
Like, that's fair. Yeah.
You play the game different than I do, than she does, than he does, yeah. Right? And so like getting that feedback of like, hey, how do you play? Oh, you're a sniper. Oh, you want long sight lines. Oh, I really love the shotgun. Cool. Now I got to have close quarters. Like getting all those personalities in a map is what makes a map really shine.
Yeah, you do have to design for the game that you're playing in. That's absolutely correct. When I say that, I mean like in terms of mini games or like if you ask a guy that's really good at making racetrack maps for feedback, it doesn't always translate, but it can. Just take everybody's advice with a grain of salt. That's all I was trying to get there. But you definitely want to design for different styles of play. If you want to go onto the competitive scene, you have to find like what weapons you put on the map, how people are going to use them, and how you can get people to have fun on there. And yeah, refine and improve, and you got to test. Like that's the main goal. All that hard work that we do, like for all these playlists. Is just iteration, like testing if something works and then like hammering it out. There's a reason why there's a hammer and anvil for Forge. It's a lot. It's just hammering, and you have to get that sword to be really sharp at the end. If you just bang on it a few times, it's just going to be a hunk of metal.
Yeah. And then for our last topic that we'll wrap up with these last few minutes, philosophy of design by Mr. Icy Hot.
That's me.
I don't know how much time we have left here, but I'm going to keep it as brief as possible. Gameplay comes first. It always comes first. I mean, you can create a great set piece. You can create a walking racetrack, if you will, for somebody. It's great to walk around in, sort of like you can imagine yourself in a cathedral or something going up a spiral staircase. But if that's all your map has, you know, it's that same kind of one-note experience that you brought up. It's not going to be competitive. It might be interesting. It might be hard. It might be a compelling piece of geometry to work with, but it's not going to lead to anything interesting as far as gameplay goes. And one of the really important things to understand about that is to recognize that you're designing for a particular sandbox. And in the case of Halo 5 or HCS settings, that sandbox is going to have particular characteristics. You're going to be working with particular weapons. You're going to be working with particular movement capabilities. You're going to be working with all this stuff, and it all comes together. You're going to have to look at scaling. You're going to have to look at player movement speed. You're going to have to look at jump height. You're going to have to look at clamber height. You're going to have to look at how far you can jump forwards using the advanced Spartan Motion abilities that were added to Halo 5. And that can be really challenging. Or it can be really fun. Depends on how you approach them and how you understand how they can be used. So good example to keep in mind is, a lot of people complain about the Spartan abilities. I'm going to leave that out of the conversation. But the point is that you can use them in your design in a really meaningful way. So let's say you want to design something for the slide ability. You want to give a player a choice. Am I going to go to objective A, or am I going to go to objective B? Objective A, I can walk there, but I'm exposed, and there's a power weapon. Objective B, I can sprint there, and I can slide, you know, under this lower piece of cover that keeps me hidden from the vantage point that would get me if I went to objective A. Well, path A, excuse me, it's the same objective. But, you know, you have those two paths to the same objective. One of them may be better than the other, given where the players are in the map, and you always have to keep that in mind when you're designing. And then come back to that one note gameplay thing. It's a competitive game. So you have to think in terms of principles that you can apply to all kinds of competitive situations. This includes other sports. You know, I come from a kind of sporting background. I play golf, I play hockey, I play lacrosse. And one of the really important things that you recognize by playing those other sports is that, just like with the staircase, I don't know how many of you play golf, but if you know, like, every hole on a golf course is a dog leg to the left with water to the left as well, you know, it might be a difficult course. It might be really visually interesting, but you're going to have a lot of angry people losing golf balls and spending a lot of money not playing at your course. So, yeah, I mean, really, to take away from that, it just comes down to designing for gameplay, giving players meaningful choices, and not necessarily designing for different styles of play, but to allow different styles of play to emerge as a result of the choices that the players make on your level. So, yeah, and then you can work in the aesthetics and kind of tie that all up together with the color palette that you use and the textures that you use, and kind of maybe make it a little bit more meaningful than just a gray blob that you can get with Reach. So that's
start with the blob and win with the blob. Well, thanks everyone for attending. I know we ran over by 30 minutes, so this has been the longest panel, but honestly one of the best panels that I've had the honor to host. Unfortunately, we're not going to take Q&As here, but if you do have questions for everyone, we will be walking around the show floor a little bit. So come on up to us, ask us anything that you want, and thanks for attending the panel today.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for sticking in there.